This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is an update of workers' compensation laws and workers' rights. We are doing this program live on the evening of August 3rd. And for those of you who are into our Call a Lawyer night, because we are doing this live, we're having Call a Lawyer. And let me give you the number very, very quickly. 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. If you'd like to speak to one of several attorneys for our Call a Lawyer, which we normally do once a month. My guests on this segment of Your Legal Rights are a couple of people who've been on the program a number of times, very experienced. Jason Marcus is a specialist in workers' compensation laws. He's also treasurer of the executive board of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, which we refer to as CAA, C-A-A-A. He's a partner in the Sacramento law firm of Marcus, Regalado, and Marcus. And our other guest, Alice O'Sullivan, specialist in workers' compensation law. She's former chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Currently, she's on the board of directors of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And both of my guests are specialists certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, which we'll talk about in just a minute. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association and by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. And I welcome Jason back to the program.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Coming here from Sacramento.
Yes, sir.
I hope you had a good trip.
Uneventful, yes.
Well, this is good, and it was wonderful to have you back.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
Would you do this? I think everybody should know about this, frankly. Certification as a specialist in workers' compensation law, which is something that the Board of Legal Specialization does. What does that mean? What do you have to do?
Well, there are a number of requirements you have to meet. I believe one of them is you have to have been in practice for at least 5 years. There are a number of practice benchmarks you have to have hit, number of trials you've done, depositions, things like that. There's also a test that is administered by the State Bar of California that you have to take and pass.
Which is an additional test, one beyond when you have to become the initial test is that we have to apply for and take the state bar exam to become a lawyer.
Correct. Different than the state bar and something you take subsequent to taking the state bar, although I'll tell you, as someone who took the test not that long ago, it did bring back memories of being in the bar. Thankfully, it was only a one-day test, so not nearly as traumatic as the state bar.
No. The three-day exam of the state bar is pretty traumatic. That's true. At least that's my recollection.
And there's also peer review, which is important.
Peer review. Now, what does that mean?
It means that your colleagues and often a judge will have some input into your character and your moral whatever you call
behavior.
That. Moral behavior. Ethical behavior.
So in other words, you mean you have to be nice to the other people who you're dealing with, the other lawyers?
Well, you have to be honest.
You
at least have to be fair, honest. You have to have a decent reputation, because if you don't, that's one of the things that some people get confused about having an attorney who's aggressive and, you know, I want this attorney who's going to go in and
just going to rip apart the opposition,
yes.
Huh?
Well, in workers' compensation, I think you get Jason, you can agree or not, but I think you get a lot farther with honey than you do with vinegar.
I agree. Even I've practiced law a long, long time. By the way, for all of you, in the event that you are looking for a certified specialist in any one of the 11 fields, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, its website, which you might want to jot down, if I could only get the words out properly, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to legal specialist on the upper left side of your computer, and you can plug in where you are in California, and that then you look for the specialty that you're looking for. Also, for the California Applicants Attorneys Association, that website, if you're looking for a workers' compensation attorney, otherwise through CAA, that's www.caaa.org. So those are two websites that I think you might want to have should you need the help of a lawyer for the future.
Chuck, I'd just like to comment that CAA gives these conventions and they give education to people who either are specialists or want to become specialists. There's also a requirement that one keeps your education up to be a certified specialist.
Oh, sure.
And CA provides, I think, the best education that's around for comp lawyers.
Well, thank you. I'm admittedly biased, being that I'm a CA member. I'm on CA's executive board. I've spoken at a number of CA panels. I do agree with that. But yes, absolutely. And Alice makes a good point. As a lawyer, you have to keep up on your annual mandatory continuing legal education, MCLE. And when you become a certified specialist, there is an additional requirement of additional MCLE hours you have to have. And, you know, for a worker that's looking for a lawyer, as complex as workers' compensation is, as much as there is to know about it, and frankly, to stay up to speed on all the changes, I think it's certainly something to look for if you can find someone that you think you can trust, and that person's also a certified specialist. That really tells you that that person is dedicated to workers' compensation, and hopefully has a really good understanding of what they're doing and how to get the best possible result for that particular worker.
What's the situation medical and workers' comp today?
Well, as I often tell my clients, and forgive me in advance, workers' compensation medical sucks right now, in my opinion.
Ooh.
I know, but
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's a very unlawyerly thing to say.
But I think we understand what you're saying.
Well, you know, the labor code provides that injured workers are entitled to all medical treatment that's necessary and reasonable to cure or relieve from the effects of their injury, which is relatively broad. And that benefit, that medical treatment, can be for life. It is at no cost to the worker, no out-of-pockets, there's no annual or a lifetime maximum deductible. But there are a number of limits on that right. For example, employers and insurance companies who administer and provide the workers' compensation benefits can create a network, what they call a medical provider network. And in most cases, a worker has to choose from a doctor within that network. Which in and of itself is not a bad thing. I think you want doctors that know how to deal with workers' comp and have agreed to take workers' comp patients. But from a practitioner standpoint, it can be challenging because each employer or each insurance company can have their own medical provider network, and they can change networks at their whim. And so a doctor that I trust and use may be in one network but not another, or this month is in and next month is out. So it's a layer of procedural challenges that lay on top of simply getting or trying to get treatment for a worker who simply wants to get fixed and get back to work.
What if you, as a worker, you are not injured with respect to, let's say, a heart condition, and somehow, though, you are injured at work, let's say you broke your leg or something like that, but later on, maybe you have a heart condition, but you have an award of medical through the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. Is that something? Is that medical going to cover any heart condition someone has later on?
In most cases, no. Medical treatment through workers' compensation is specifically directed and in most cases limited to the injury or condition that was part of that claim. So if someone, you know, broke their leg or had surgery on their knee and has a future medical care award for their knee, that award is going to cover treatment for the knee as long as it's related in some fashion, even if just 1% to the original injury. But if they develop a subsequent heart condition, let's say, in most cases, the workers' comp medical award is not going to cover what we would call a non-industrial or a non-work-related condition.
Yes,
Chuck, yeah, I've been taking questions, as you know, on the Call a Lawyer portion
of
your program.
Yeah.
And one of the questions I've gotten more than once is not when you get the award, but a person is injured at work, they haven't settled their case, the case is not resolved, but they're getting treatment for the body part they injured, say the knee. And then they get the flu and they're off on workers' compensation. They're getting temporary disability. So the person's question is, well, since I'm off on temporary disability, shouldn't all of my medical be covered by the workers' compensation? And, of course, the answer is no. Not usually. And there could be times when it is, but generally speaking, as Jason has covered, the medical is for the body part that's injured.
For the body part that is injured.
Correct.
All right, everybody. We're doing this program live on the evening of August 3rd. Our Call a Lawyer number, in case you'd like to call and speak with one or more of the attorneys, is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. We have attorneys here in the area of criminal law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, and tax law, real estate law, if you'd like to call in. And I'll give you their names as we get further into the program. In about 20 minutes or so, I will give you our toll-free number for you to call in on the program and talk with my guest for Workers' Comp. That number is toll-free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. There is something that I know is referred to as a voucher. If someone is off work and has had been off work for quite a while, not a minor thing that you're off for a few weeks and then you can return, but let's say you did have perhaps a very serious back injury, what's the voucher system and what does that mean and what does it do for someone who's an injured worker for the future?
Sure. So in the situation you describe, someone gets hurt, someone is off work for a potentially significant period of time, and if they are not able to return to their at-injury job and their employer does not otherwise offer them a modified or alternative position that they are able to do, then that worker is entitled to what we call a supplemental job displacement benefit. We call it a voucher because, one, it's a lot shorter to say, but, two, that's really what it is. It's a job retraining voucher. Currently for people that have been hurt in 2013 or later, so anytime on or after January 1st, 2013, and meet that criteria, the voucher they get is worth $6,000. And mm-hmm. that $6,000 is not cash that is provided to the worker, but is in fact a piece of paper they get that we call a voucher, and that worker can direct the insurance company to spend up to the $6,000 at a school, educational facility, vocational facility, what have you, where the worker chooses to go to receive some training, maybe take classes, maybe learn a new trade. And so the $6,000 that is part of that voucher is spent directly to the school or the facility. And then, again, for people that have been hurt on or after the 1st of January 2013, if they get that voucher, they are currently also eligible for a separate $5,000 payment from what is called the Return to Work Supplement Fund, which is an annual fund of $120 million that is paid into by employers and insurance carriers in the state. And then California's Workers' Compensation System, the Division of Workers' Compensation, administers that fund. And so if a worker gets that voucher, there's an online application, and it's online only. They have to scan a copy of their voucher, fill out some brief information, submit it online, and typically within 30 to 60 days or often less, they will receive from the state of California a $5,000 check that is theirs to use for whatever they choose, whatever they need.
Really? It doesn't have to be for training or anything like that?
Correct. It's designed for training, but unlike the voucher that is only paid to a school, this is a
yes.
live check for $5,000.
Yes. And so in other words, you're saying, if I understand this correctly, that after January 1st of 2013, someone who has been injured and can't return to his or her original job will get a $6,000 voucher for retraining.
Yes.
Plus an additional $5,000?
Correct.
And that's $11,000.
Correct.
But only once.
Only once. And it's important to note.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. If you are an injured worker and if you have received a voucher, again, for a 2013 or later injury, in most cases you have 1 year from the date you get that voucher or the date it was issued to you to apply for that return to work fund payment, the $5,000 payment.
See.
So it's there's supposed to be notices when the vouchers come out, and hopefully if someone has an attorney, that attorney is doing it, the submission on behalf of their clients. In fact, I do that. Mm-hmm. If I know that my client is going to get a voucher or has received a voucher, I sit down at my desk and I go online to the website and plug it in and get the voucher and then make sure my staff tracks that so that they get their $5,000. Because that, frankly, for people that haven't gone back to work, every dollar helps. And
I would think so.
Yeah.
So The voucher, is that something that is automatically delivered through the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board to the injured worker, or does that have to be applied for also?
The voucher itself, the $6,000 retraining fund, is supposed to be automatically provided to the injured worker when the conditions apply, and that comes directly from the Workers' Compensation Insurance Company.
And is any of that taxable?
No. And I used to just say that because that's what I had been taught, but I actually looked it up in the IRS code the other day, and I unfortunately can't.
It's not income.
No. It's actually the federal IRS code specifically exempts workers' compensation benefits from taxable income.
Does that include the $5,000 payment?
Yes.
It does. All right. What does it mean to file for going to the Board of Workers' Compensation Appeals Board? What's involved with that?
Sure. So our workers' compensation cases are overseen judicially by an administrative law system that we call the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, or WCAB. And the WCAB is made up of a number of commissioners who are appointed by the governor and sit in San Francisco, and those commissioners oversee all of what we call local district offices, which have any number of workers' compensation judges who are there to hear workers' compensation disputes and approve workers' compensation settlements. So there's a WCAB here in San Francisco. There's one in Oakland. I practice primarily in Sacramento. You have a number further north and a whole host of them in Southern California and Central California. So the first thing that has to happen for a case to go to the WCAB is typically there's a document called an application for adjudication of claim, which has to be filed. It sounds imposing. It's not for me, but this is my life. This is what I do. I'm sure for an injured worker that doesn't have an attorney, it can be a little imposing. One thing that I want to make sure we point out for an unrepresented worker, someone without an attorney, is each local district office of the WCAB has one or more information and assistance officers who are there, who work full-time at that board and are there for the sole purpose of providing information and assistance, advice, and help with the process to unrepresented workers.
Why would someone not want to have a lawyer, though, Jason? Because my understanding of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board system is that an attorney who's representing an injured worker only gets paid once the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board issues an order for fees.
Yeah, so I work on what's called a contingency fee. So my fee is contingent upon my client getting amount of money typically when we settle the case, and that settlement has to be approved by a workers' compensation judge, and that includes my fee. So I don't get paid until the case is settled and a judge has approved my fee. In Sacramento, we regularly get 15% of the gross settlement amount. Sometimes it's a little bit less, depends on the case. But ultimately, if my client doesn't recover or we don't settle, I'm not going to get paid. But
So, Jason, you cannot accept payment unless a judge approves it. Is that right?
Absolutely correct.
And Chuck, do you mind if
I ask a couple
of questions here?
Yeah.
Is that also true with settlements? So you can't an injured worker, whether they are represented or unrepresented, they cannot have a settlement unless it's approved by a judge.
That's correct. All settlements have to be approved by a workers' compensation judge. Now, there are some exceptions for cases that what we call a carve-out, where an employer has set up their own kind of comp system outside of workers' comp, and that's a whole subset of things. Typically, you find that with iron workers and other unions often here in the city. But for the vast majority of cases, yes, a settlement has to be approved by a workers' compensation judge.
And so if somebody comes to you for a consultation,
yes,
you don't charge them for that?
I do not. There is no charge for the consultation.
And by you, you're talking now about someone who is a workers' compensation attorney.
That's correct.
Not just you personally, but across the board in California.
Yes. Our fees are highly regulated by the state bar, including the no charge for the consultation. If I were to charge my client an hourly rate or take a retainer, I would have to have a written agreement and specifically get that approved by a judge. And I cannot recall a time that I have done that, or any lawyer in my office has done that, or any workers' comp lawyer that I know has done that.
I've never heard of that either. And I just have one more question. So when you're talking about your fee, that's usually based on actual money that's recovered by your client. It isn't usually based on if you get their medical treatment, for example.
Correct. Yeah. Medical treatment, as big of a benefit as that is not, in most cases, actual money paid to my client. So typically, there has to be some amount of money that is going to be paid to my client for me to get a fee. And then again, my fee comes out of that portion that goes to my client, again, in my case, usually 15%.
What's the basis of money being paid to your client if it's not medical coverage? What would that be? Pain and suffering or what?
No pain and suffering. That's actually not part of our system. Usually the money that I'm taking a fee off is what we call permanent disability. So if someone has an injury that leaves them with some sort of permanent residual disability, we have a system in place to what we call rate that disability, where a doctor evaluates them, puts a percentage on it, and then we have tables that give a dollar value for each percentage of disability. So typically that money is paid to my client, and out of that money is normally where my fee comes from.
All right. We're doing this program live on the evening of August 3rd. It's our Call a Lawyer night, which we regularly do in the state of California, and also for anyone who's listening to the program. The number is 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. We have attorneys here in the area of criminal law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate law. No obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service that these attorneys are doing, and so please feel free to call in between now and the end of the hour, 1-800-525-9917. In about 7 minutes or so, something like that, I'm going to give our toll-free, or going to invite you to call in and speak to my guests on the air on this live program on August 3rd. That toll-free number, if you'd like to take it down now, is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. In case you've tuned in a little bit late, we're talking about workers' compensation laws and workers' rights, some of the very basic things. My guests are both certified specialists in workers' compensation law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, Jason Marcus, who is also the treasurer. I have to be really nice to him. Treasurer on the executive board of the California. Yeah, on the executive board of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, folks, which is one of the funders of this program. Alice O'Sullivan is here, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and she's currently on the board of directors of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Let's talk a little bit. Before we went on the air, we talked a bit about fraud that's going on, and not only by doctors, but by attorneys in California. What's going on? And what is CAAA trying to do to stop this, if anything?
Well, first off, there have been some stories in the last year or so. I believe one big piece by the Center for Investigative Journalism that's talked about some medical provider fraud in California, some of which covers workers' compensation. Some of it is also Medicare, Medicaid fraud, where doctors are making referrals for kickbacks or performing unnecessary procedures or billing things that didn't get done or billing what they should not be billing for those things. And there's been kind of a push to crack down on that in, I think, especially in the last 6 months or so. I'm sad to say that there have been a couple of attorneys that have been wrapped up in that. And I don't want to make this a north-south thing, but it definitely seems to be more prevalent in Southern California, I think, simply because the volume of claims you have, the population down there, it doesn't seem to be, at least I don't see it, as an issue up here. So we've heard, we at CAA, from the administration, those folks in the state administration that oversee workers' comp, that they are very concerned about that. So there's been some proposals put out there that may or may not come to pass in the current legislative session. For example, one idea I think would, if a doctor has been convicted of fraud under Medicare or Medicaid or Medi-Cal, the administrative director of the workers' comp system in California would be able to use that conviction of fraud to prevent that provider from performing services in a workers' compensation claim. That's a power the administrative director does not currently have. you know, cost certainly supports anything that is going to eliminate fraud, eliminate waste, whether it's coming from a provider, whether it's coming from an attorney, whether it's coming from an employer. You know, employers might misclassify their employees or not secure workers' compensation coverage, or if there is an insurance company that isn't paying a valid claim or providing benefits mm-hmm. that they're supposed to. Because at the end of the day, fraud takes away a money that should otherwise be there to provide benefits for injured workers. And ultimately, everyone in the system, the bureaucracy, the doctors, the insurance companies, the attorneys, should be working to provide as quickly and as fully as possible the right benefit to an injured worker. Because, look, I'll tell you from experience, my clients want more than nothing than to get fixed and to get out of the system.
Sure, of course.
And the fraud and everything else, it just takes away from that.
If a worker feels that he or she is being misclassified, and the reason for the misclassification by the employer is because if this person is misclassified, then the workers' compensation insurance rate is cheaper for the employer.
Correct.
If that worker realizes that that's what's going on, what recommendation do you have for that person in terms of, I mean, obviously that worker would be concerned about retaliation from the employer, but what recommendation would you have?
Two things. One, I recommend they contact their local district attorney's office. And then two, I recommend they contact the insurance commissioner's office.
California.
Correct. Yeah, I believe it's Dave Jones currently. Although, yeah. if I'm wrong, I'm going to feel silly. So, but yeah, I believe either one of those things would hopefully lead to some investigation of that and to right that wrong.
The likelihood is, if they know they're misclassified, it's probably because they've been classified as an independent contractor.
Yes. Yes.
And therefore have been denied benefits.
That's
frequently the case.
Yeah. You know, I see it a lot with truck drivers or delivery drivers that come in and say, oh, well, my employer said I'm an independent contractor, but, you know, they're wearing the company logo and they're driving the company truck and they're given a schedule and they're told where to be when and you know.
So that's a misclassification in your legal opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that in my experience, the law in California favors a finding of employment. The law would much rather find that someone is an employee as opposed to an independent contractor because of all the protections and rights and benefits that being classified as an employee provides.
Right.
Alice, before we end, in about half a minute or so, end the statewide version of the program, which is half an hour, you had mentioned before we went on the air that you were finding that some of the people who have called you for Call a Lawyer have said, I've called my lawyer, he or she never calls me back. What recommendation do you have for that person?
Well, it's a volume practice. We've talked about the fees. I think if you have access to email, that's often a very good way to get a hold of your attorney. Another thing, if they have an assistant, don't hesitate to talk to the assistant. A lot of times the attorney's in court all day and their assistants are trained to know answers to a whole lot of questions, so you may get a quick answer.
All right, everybody. Now is your chance to call in if you'd like to call in and speak to my guests on the air. No obligation on your part whatsoever. And we even have a toll-free number for you. And we're doing this program live on the evening of August 3rd, 2016, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255 if you want to speak to Jason Marcus and Alice O'Sullivan. Also, it is our Call a Lawyer night, and the reason we're doing it on the first Wednesday of the month is because my program was preempted by the Democratic Convention last week. We normally do Call a Lawyer on the fourth Wednesday of the month. And the phone number for Call a Lawyer is 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. Let me tell you who's here. For criminal law, Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law, and he's vice chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. Jeff will be, in October, the actual chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. Jessica Chilek is here for landlord-tenant law. Tai Astanci, employment law. Frank Adam for tax law, real estate. Frank's also a real estate broker. And tomorrow, if you're being chased by your creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available. That's tomorrow, Thursday, August 4th, from 8 a.m. to noon. Again, no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service that Leon Baer is performing. His number, an 800 number, 800-477-3111. 800-477-3111. If you call and have to leave a message, say that you're a listener to Your Legal Rights, leave your name and phone number, and Mr. Baer will get back to you. So what we're going to do now, as soon as Martin, who actually is my assistant on the program, puts someone's name up there, we will take your first call. Support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco, and if you have a legal problem in this area, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and in the last year or so at Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, here's that number, 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. In addition, if you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And every county in California has a bar association and lawyer referral service, and you can call your own with minor exception. For a half an hour consultation, you will pay somewhere between $25 to $35 to meet with the attorney. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. It's a great public service. Additional funding for this program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So those are some of the funders, and we're going to start with Deborah. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So just a little bit. My case has been going on for a long time. It has not settled. I'm an injured worker. I had my permanent stationery almost 3 years ago. I don't hear from my lawyer, and my insurance company has stopped paying my medications. Mm. I'm having to pay myself about $700 a month, and
wow.
I just can't get any help anywhere.
Yeah, I'm on the one hand glad to hear that you hear that you have a lawyer. I'm sorry that he or she is not getting back to you. You know, I see this all the time in my practice where my clients have trouble getting medical treatment, even if they've gotten that treatment before. The current law allows an insurance company to submit each and every request with very few exceptions that a treating doctor submits to what's called utilization review, where a doctor that the insurance company hires and the insurance company chooses gets to make medical treatment decisions about my client without ever seeing my client, without ever talking to my client, doing a essentially paper-only review, and in many cases never even talking to the treating doctor before making that decision. And what I see is some insurance companies choose to send each and every request. So maybe my client's on some medication and they get it authorized 3 or 4 months in a row, and then on month number 5, it gets denied. And under the current law that went into effect in 2013, I, as a lawyer, have very little ability to challenge that. I can send it out for a second paper-only review that we call independent medical review. And we've seen with that the independent medical reviewer upholds the initial utilization review denial about 90% of the time. And even if I get an unfavorable decision there, the law in most cases prevents me from going down to court and having a judge weigh in on that. It's very, very, very discouraging. That doesn't excuse a lawyer not getting back to his or her client. So, Deborah, to hopefully address your situation, I would suggest calling your lawyer. If that doesn't work, write to your lawyer.
And if that doesn't work, what recommendation would you have?
I get another lawyer is my question.
That may be the thing to do, unfortunately, yeah. And that does happen from time to time.
Have you tried talking to your lawyer's assistant?
I have. I have sent faxes, many faxes, so I know they're getting them. They just don't respond.
I think, Deborah, at this point, you've been very patient. I think it might be well for you to see if you can get some advice from another workers' compensation appeals lawyer.
I will call your number that you gave.
Let me give that again. By the way, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the statewide number, if you want to find out who lawyers may be in your area in California, it's 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left part of your screen for legal specialists, click that on, and for your county, and then look into workers' compensation appeals, workers' compensation appeals worker, or I should say workers' compensation lawyer, and find out who's available and then contact. And that's what I would suggest, Deborah. You've been very patient, but I think you've got to be a little bit more aggressive at this point.
So Deborah,
I think the laws have to change, too, because
yeah. here's
I've had to make my own appeals.
I want you to pay attention to this. When you call the California Board of Legal Specialization for a workers' compensation attorney, before you talk to the attorney, find out if they represent injured workers or if they represent the employer insurance carrier.
Yeah. Okay.
Because if you call, there's no distinction on their
very
website.
Good. Thank you very much, Alice, on that. Okay. We're going to move on, Deborah, and good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
I hope it works. And also, with respect to the workers' compensation attorneys, the California Applicants Attorneys Association has an 800 number. That's 800-648-3132. 800-648-3132. The website is www.caaa.org. CAAA.org. Okay, we have now Mick. Mick, welcome to the program. You still there?
Yes, I sure am. Thanks a lot for taking
the
call.
Sure, of course.
As I'm sure you specialists in the field know, and some of your listeners might, a way that the system, including doctors and lawyers, determines the percentage of disability of an injured worker is a qualified medical examination. And I work as an interpreter, and there are two kinds of interpreters that are fair game for those appointments. They're either interpreters that have been certified by the National Board of Certification for Medical Interpreters, or interpreters that are on the state court list that have passed a more rigorous exam, even than the NCBMI exam. I bring that up as the first point, since we're discussing fraud. A lot of people are not using certified interpreters, which can cause a problem. But then on the topic of fraud, the second point, more importantly, that I wanted to bring up, I've done probably 70 or 80 QMEs, qualified medical examinations with qualified medical examining doctors, in my life, where that doctor will issue a percentage, for example, say your back gives you 50%, 70% disability, to an injured worker who will take that to his law firm and then usually end up making a negotiation with an insurance company for a payout or not. During those appointments, shockingly and quite unfortunately, all here in the Bay Area, so I wouldn't consider fraud myself just to be, in my firsthand experience, a Southern California problem. In Oakland and in Berkeley, in the East Bay, I've seen at least 10 cases where the doctor clearly did not allow me to interpret or did not answer the patient's questions or engaged in violently rude behavior with the patient. And Title 8, Section 40 of the California Code of Regulations specifically says if a doctor does that during a QME, that the injured worker that's being examined is to stand up and leave the appointment and ask for a do-over. The code also then lays out a body that is to punish doctors for this behavior, and the instances where doctors have been held accountable for this behavior are so very few that this body is one that I'm personally not taking very seriously. But I just wanted to bring up that end of the spectrum for discussion.
I think, Mick, that is a terrific comment. Thank you very much for calling.
Sure.
Jason, what comments do you have in response to what Mick just came up with?
I fully agree. You've got quite the grasp there on the regulations, which there are many of them in workers' compensation. You know, as a lawyer, if I was made aware of that, my remedy would be to file for a hearing and go down before a judge and present my evidence to a judge. And if the other side was contesting that, ask the judge to issue a decision and hopefully award my client the new QME evaluation. I will also say, as to the latter point about punishing those doctors. The Division of Workers' Compensation, which ultimately oversees this in what's called the medical unit, they oversee the QME doctors and their certification and whatnot, has a complaint form that an injured worker can submit if they feel that they have been mistreated or if they weren't allowed to provide answers or, as Mick explained.
How do you get that? How do you go about getting
it? My belief is it's available online, and I don't have the website, and if I did, it would be long and unwieldy. I would suggest if someone Googles the California DWC medical unit or QME complaint form, they should be able to find their way there. And that is definitely something that they should do if they believe they have been mistreated during a QME evaluation.
Well, Mick, thank you very much for bringing that up. It's very important, obviously, to have your comments as well as Jason's. Richard, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I'll make this probably a laughable thing. So about 30 years ago, I was injured on the job where a person fell on my head. And now, 30 years later, doctors say, well, some kind of compression thing has happened to your spine. Well, we never reported it to our employer. It was kind of embarrassing that it even happened. So there's no I'm assuming there's no way that workers' comp could deal with an injury that happened over 30 years ago.
But let me, Richard, let me make sure I understand this. You're saying someone landed on your head, not intentionally, I presume, but by accident.
Right, fell off a ladder.
And you never reported this and asked for some assistance through the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board?
That's right.
Wow, what a guy you are.
Did your employer know that it happened?
Excuse me, please?
Did your employer know that the incident happened?
You never reported it to your employer.
No, I've not reported
it. Gotten the other guy in deep trouble.
Oh.
But did your was your employer aware that it happened?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so in most cases, you want to report a claim. If you get hurt, report an injury as soon as possible. And in most cases, you have to file a claim for an injury within 1 year of the date of injury. As with most rules, there are exceptions to that. The reason Alice asked the question, did your employer know? Because if your employer had knowledge of that and didn't offer you to file a claim, the statute of limitations, as we call it, that 1 year limit may be tolled, that is extended. On a more practical level, at this point, going back 30 years and trying to find out which insurance company was covering your employer and whether that insurance company is still around, which, to be frank, they probably aren't at this point. I suspect you would spend years and years tied up in litigation trying to find a liable party to perhaps no fruitful end. Unfortunate, it's a very unfortunate situation. I certainly hope that you have access to medical insurance where you can get the treatment you need to address that compression problem that they've now found.
Do you have medical insurance for this, Richard?
I do. I have Kaiser insurance.
Well, that's good.
I respectfully suggest that you utilize that insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And wish you the best of luck.
Did you, when this other worker fell off the ladder onto your head, did you lose some time from work?
No.
What do you have, a big S? Do you have a big S on your shirt that stands for Superman or what? Wow, that's pretty impressive. Richard, thanks very much for calling. Sorry we can't give you more advice, but I think it's great that you have insurance through Kaiser, and good luck to you.
Okay, thanks for your program.
Take care. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, our toll-free number, in case you'd like to talk to my guests, Certified Specialist in Workers' Compensation Law, Alice O'Sullivan and Jason Marcus. That's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We have a few more minutes left where you can call in and talk with them. And again, this is a public service that my guests are performing here. They've been doing this, frankly. Alice has been doing this for years with me. She's been a great supporter, great supporter of my program. Jason is new, and we're going to spend the next 20, 30 years, Jason and I, working on this. In any event, we also have Call a Lawyer Night, and that's tonight. We're doing this live program. It's on Wednesday, August 3rd. So if you get this program delayed in some other part of California or somewhere else in the United States, this number is not going to be good. It's good tonight. on August 3rd, and that's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank our attorneys who have joined us for Call a Lawyer. Jeff Hayden, who will be the chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar as of October. He's a certified specialist in criminal law. Jessica Chilek is here for landlord-tenant law. Dai Asanash for employment law. Frank Adam for tax law, real estate, and real estate law, and also he's a real estate broker. And then tomorrow, Thursday, August 4th, from 8 a.m. to noon, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to speak with you. Again, no obligation on your part whatsoever. He's done this for years, very generous with his time. That number, 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111 if you're being chased by your creditors. If you call and get the voicemail, then leave your name and phone number. Say you listen to Your Legal Rights, and Mr. Baer will call you back.
Chuck,
could I
make a brief comment
please
about this? You often give my phone number out, and I want to thank callers who have called me. I just wanted to quickly distinguish between the Your Legal Rights program, which is being carried live with Jason and I as your guests, and the Call a Lawyer. These are lawyers who are in a separate room altogether. It's off the air. Sometimes you don't know what field it is. So while Chuck will announce these different fields, you may not know the field of law you're calling about.
Mm-hmm.
But they will be able to help you. Whoever answers sure that phone will be able to sort it out.
Yeah,
for
we
you
lock them in that room for the whole hour. And at the end of the program, we will unlock it so that they can come out.
Yeah. But there's a pizza
in
there.
Yeah, no pressure.
There's
whatsoever
a pizza in there, Chuck.
But there's pizza there, too, for them. Okay. Larry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi, Larry.
Yeah, I had a question. About 10 or 11 years ago, I was working for a government agency, and I was using a jackhammer, and something happened to my back as I was lifting the jackhammer out of the hole. And it was a kind of thing where I had great difficulty getting in and out of my truck, great difficulty driving home, great difficulty sitting down or getting up, and extremely painful. I did report it to my employer, and I went to one of those medical clinics that was recommended and ended up getting like a cortisone injection and then returning for therapy and stuff like that. And in the end, I kept getting these large packets from, I guess it was the insurance company that was handling the workers' comp claim, asking me questions about this or that and releasing my medical information and stuff like that. Well, over a period of months, when all was said and done, and I had gotten finally after a few months, I mean, I didn't really miss that much work, maybe a week, but I had restricted work. And then as the restrictions got lighter and lighter and lighter, and then finally a release to return back to work. But then I got this packet saying something about a 20% disability. And I didn't really know what it meant because I had been released to return back to work. And so I was just happy that my back allowed me to go back to work. But since then, the injury has reoccurred. I've changed employers, and I had an incident on this agent, the government agency that I work for now, and missed about a week of work when it happened here.
Let me do this, Larry. We have okay other people who'd like to talk to my guests, but let me ask you this. Did you ever retain a lawyer to help you?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I was just so happy to be back to work.
Let me do this. Let me get some comments from Jason and Alice on this, because I think you've been too brave. Whether or not anything can be done at this point, I don't know. But I'd like you to turn your radio back up and get some comments from Jason Marcus. Jason, please.
Well, the letter that you got where you say it referenced to 20%, in my experience, that would likely mean that you were found by some doctor, whether a treating physician or a qualified medical evaluator, to have a 20% disability, which likely would have entitled you to some money, what we call a permanent disability benefit. It may be that you were also entitled to an award of future medical care. What I would want to know if Larry was in my office is, you know, did he ever sign any papers? Did he ever go see a judge? Did he ever get anything in the mail subsequent to that that said award or that came from the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board? It could be that his case has remained open all this time. Typically, if there's an award like that, even if you do nothing, the case, frankly, can just remain open. And sometimes if the insurance company, maybe they put it in the wrong box and they forget about it, nothing happens over a period of years, but the case itself may not be completely gone.
Would you recommend, Jason, at this point that Larry be more aggressive as a consumer and contact either the Board of Legal Specialization for a certified specialist in workers' comp, or contact the California Applicants Attorneys Association and get a consultation as to whether or not maybe he's got something that he's entitled to?
That would be good. And then he also, if he would wants to, could talk to the information and assistance officer at his local Workers' Compensation Appeals Board District Office.
Is there one down in Santa Clara County?
There is. There's one in San Jose, actually.
In San Jose. So, Larry, you're in San Jose, and that's something that you should do. Alice, please.
Well, I have a couple of other comments. I think Larry mentioned he was injured again. And there's, Jason, you might want to comment further on this, but there's something called apportionment, which means that the current employer insurance company is probably going to want to get some credit for the prior injury. And they cannot do that if there is no settlement of the prior injury against mm-hmm. which to take credit. Mm-hmm. So they may do the work for you. If you ask for your benefits that you're entitled to under this injury, perhaps they'll go back and find out that you either did or didn't get an award before, and you don't have to worry about – I mean, you have to worry about it, but you don't have to do the work to find it out.
Correct. And on that point, you know, he mentioned a reoccurrence. Whether it's a new injury or an aggravation, as we call it, of the existing injury, if it happened during a period of employment with a new employer, he in most cases has the right to file a new claim. If he hasn't already done so, whether he should or should not do that, that's really something that would require more in-depth discussion with an attorney such as myself.
Absolutely.
And certainly, Larry, at this point, be more, if you don't mind my saying, an aggressive consumer. Get some help from a specialist, certified specialist in workers' compensation law. Don't tough it out. You need to get some help. So good luck to you. This may be our last call. Jean, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, this is somewhat of an unusual situation, but I was a domestic employee in the household of someone who was paying me by letting me basically through rent for helping take care of his two sons.
So you were living there. You were living there.
I was living there. In the
and
house.
And that's how you were being paid, because you were living there.
And he was supposed to also, we had agreed he would give me room and board, but he refused to, once I started living there after a few months, he refused to let me share the food and also stopped paying for gas. He was going to give me a stipend because I was responsible for driving the boys to school when he had a shared custody arrangement with his ex. And he was always very high strung and interrogated me and the boys incessantly about what we talked about when we were together.
Let me ask you this, though, because we're getting close to running out of time. What is your question?
What happened toward the end was that he started threatening to kill me if I didn't answer questions, and so I left.
Whoa.
And, yeah, I mean, just completely unprovoked.
Whoa.
And very off, just completely off the charts in terms of you know, he would say, I'll kill you if you don't tell me what.
Gene, if I may, we're...
So I left, and I was traumatized by the situation. I was very, very...
Gene, let Marcus ask you a question.
Okay, so I was going to ask, were you physically injured on the job?
I wasn't physically injured, but okay. I was psychologically very...
Right.
I have PTSD, I think, as a result.
So let me just make a comment. I think Jean brings up a good point, and it's unfortunate that it has to happen through her experience. But the workers' compensation system in California recognizes not only physical injuries, but also what we call psychiatric or emotional or mental injuries. Mm-hmm. They have some specific and unique rules that apply to them. But you certainly can file a claim for, again, what we label a psychiatric injury, which would include something like post-traumatic stress disorder.
How long ago is this, Jean, that this occurred, just roughly?
It was a year, almost a year, not quite.
Okay, so she's still within a year period.
She is. I suggest that you probably want to contact a workers' compensation lawyer sooner rather than later. And I also think it might be wise for you to contact an employment law attorney. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some workers' comp attorneys who also do employment law, things like wage and hour law and all those things, because it sounds like there's a lot going on here, not just that could be a potential workers' compensation claim, the injury, but other issues that would fall outside of workers' compensation, such as the promise to pay certain things and then revoking that promise.
Gene, here's what I would suggest, if you're ready to write down. I think you should start by calling the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar, because I see you're in San Francisco. Are you ready to write?
Yes.
415-98.
Yeah, I have that number.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
I think you should call them, tell them what the story is, ask them to set you up for an initial half-hour consultation. As Jason says, probably start off with an employment law attorney who represents employees, not employers. Start with that and then go from there, and hopefully that will get you on track. You are, as you're saying, this is not quite a year. You don't want to let that go beyond a year, as I understand it. So give them a call tomorrow and set up an appointment.
Well, shouldn't I directly contact workers' comp and employment?
Well, you can do that also. Sure.
Yeah.
You can do that
okay.
also. Good luck. Good luck
Thank
to you.
You.
We are unfortunately we're beginning to run out of time, and I thank you very much for calling and speaking with us. And I think one of the things that I want to stress for people again is, there is, for workers' comp, there is no initial charge for a consultation. And so you can either contact the California Applicants Attorneys Association, I've given those the phone number and the website, or the Board of Legal Specialization, I've given that number and the website, and have that as something that can help you in terms of trying to find out what your rights are. All right, everybody, I want to thank you very much, both of you, for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Great to have you here, Jason, and great to have you here, Alice.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, thanks,
Jason
Chuck.
Marcus and Alice O'Sullivan, both certified specialists in workers' compensation laws, both certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, both members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Jason is the treasurer on the executive board of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Alice is a former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, now is on the board of directors of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Great to have both of you. Next time, on Your Legal Rights, the topic will be the effect of recent immigration rulings on people and proceedings. I think you'll know what I'm talking about. My guest will be Thomas Rouge, a certified attorney in civil trial advocacy by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, Elise Shugal, specialist in immigration and nationality law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. She's directing attorney of the Immigration Program, Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto. Miriam Kelly, a member of the New York and New Jersey Bar Associations and senior attorney and supervisor of the DACA DAPA program at Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Additional funding of the program is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.